The Leslie Marshall Show, a true democracy in talk radio. Of, for, and by you, the people.
Live from our nation's capital, it's Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
Hi, I'm Brad Bannon. I'm the host of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm a national democratic strategist and pollster, and I'm a political analyst for News Radio KNX in Los Angeles. My company, Bannon Communications Research, polls for progressive issue groups, labor unions, and Democrats. Mondays on Deadline DC, I talk to the people and players behind the politics and policies that guide our great nation forward. This week, we've got an all-star cast for you. In the first half hour, our guest is Sarah Jones, who is the editor-in-chief of Politicus USA. Sarah is going to discuss the reaction to President Biden's State of the Union address, and also we're going to delve into the subject of the decline of online news media. Then in the second half hour, noted economist Dr. Rob Shapiro joins us to discuss the Biden economic boom. And as always, we have our crackerjack executive producer, Mark Grimaldi, who makes sure the show runs on time and stays online. Before we get to our first guest, we have this clip from the President's State of the Union address.
Now it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union. And yes, my purpose tonight is to wake up the Congress and alert the American people that this is no ordinary moment either. Not since President Lincoln and the Civil War have freedom and democracy been under assault at home as they are today. What makes our moment rare is that freedom and democracy are under attack at both at home and overseas at the very same time.
That was President Biden discussing the threat to freedom here in America and abroad across the world. Our guest in this half hour is Sarah Jones, editor-in-chief of Politicus USA. You can reach her on Twitter or X or whatever they call it these days, at Politicus Sarah. That's PolitiCusSarah. Welcome back to Deadline DC, Sarah.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today to talk about the State of the Union with you.
Yeah, let's talk about the State of the Union. One of the things I thought was interesting, and that clip came at the start of the speech last week. He said that democracy was under siege at home and abroad. My take on that, and I'd like to know if you share it, is that the president was saying that democracy is under attack from home by Donald Trump and abroad from Vladimir Putin.
Yeah, that's exactly what I heard from that. And I think I would expand it to be many of the MAGA representatives in the House and even some in the Senate who are undermining democracy and through obstruction, through walking away from deals they agree to, some of them that participated. I was really, really glad that he brought up January 6th, because I feel like the majority of Americans had, you know, their vote was at risk. That's what Donald Trump and his supporters were trying to do, was overthrow an election. So throw away all these people's votes. That's the majority of the country. And so when President Biden brought that up, and I did highlight this too, you know, because so many people, I think, end up talking about what the Republicans did because they do troll for attention so well. And I just wanted to highlight this because it was the clip that you played that really resonated with me. And then this part, which goes to your question, where he said, many of you were here on that darkest of days. We all saw with our own eyes. The insurrectionists were not patriots. They had come to stop the peaceful transfer of power, to overturn the will of the people. Finally, someone said that. You know, we hear that in court, but we don't hear that from the media. We don't hear that on TV. And I thought that was very important that he highlighted that. And in his whole speech was a rallying cry for democracy and how it is working, how he has made it work here in this country since he took office, with all of the policies that he, you know, enumerate. I wish that people who weren't sure how they were going to vote would all go watch the speech before, you know, they listen to anybody else. Just go listen to President Biden.
Let me ask you this. Since I, as a consultant, are in the message development business, I took when the president mentioned that democracy was under attack home and abroad, I took that to mean that would to indicate that was going to be the message of his reelection campaign. Do you think it will work, Sarah?
Well, it did work in the last midterms. And we saw that was something even Republicans were crossing the aisle to get rid of these election deniers. So I do think that's going to work. I think that's something, again, the media doesn't talk about this as much as they should. There are several people now who've actually started to focus on this, so I'm glad to see that. But overall, the whole, you know, overarching narrative from the media in general isn't about what the our democracy, and our democracy is at risk. I mean, if Donald Trump gets back into office, this country will no longer be a democracy within a very short time. And I think when he, you know, met with Viktor Orban at Mar-a-Lago the other day, and just an article came out this morning about how, you know, he was praising Hitler. This is not somebody who respects democracy. And so, yes, that threat is very real. And I think the American people know that. The media might not know it, but the American people feel it. I mean, when somebody comes to steal your vote, and many of us, I live in a state where they try to do that here, when that happens to you, it's a visceral feeling that you can see, and then row, like that's another freedom they've taken away. So these are fundamental rights. These are human rights. The right to vote and have your vote counted is a basic right. Those are all things they've already tried to take away. So yeah, I think it is very a strong message. And I think more Americans feel threatened by those rights being taken away than are worried about Joe Biden's age.
Okay, well, now that you've brought it up, I'd like to ask you a question about that. It seems to me that during the State of the Union address and recently in general, the president has addressed the age issue directly. In the State of the Union address, I think, first of all, that the best way to address the issue is the presentation he makes to the American public, and his demeanor was very forceful and aggressive during the State of the Union, which I think addresses the age issue. And I also think at the end, he said something to the effect, I may be old, but I look to the future. Unlike my GOP friends who are looking to the past, do you think that age issue is polls indicate is a significant concern. Do you think the president's making progress addressing that problem?
Well, I think he did actually with the State of the Union. And again, this is like a unfiltered version of the president that's not being seen through the media. The New York Times didn't get to tell a story. And this is this is the person that when I'm covering the White House, this is what I see. So it didn't surprise me, but I was really glad that other people, and I've heard from many people who before the State of the Union were really afraid of, you know, is he going to stumble? They're thinking he's too old. We need to find somebody else. And then afterwards, they're all saying, wow, that was fantastic. I think if people watched that, then their concern about his age is no longer. But there are many people who are still, the media is going to keep beating that drum. And so there, that will still be a concern that people cite. But as it comes closer to Donald Trump versus Joe Biden, and hopefully President Biden will continue to get himself out there in this way, because yes, it was. It was aggressive. And you could tell the Republicans couldn't even criticize him afterwards. They're so used to saying, oh, he's, you know, Sleepy Joe. And all of a sudden you've got aggressive, optimistic, fierce fighter Joe. And they didn't know what to do.
Okay, we're going to take a break now to give our radio listeners a little break. But we'll be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and our guest, Sarah Jones, editor-in-chief of Politicus USA. Sarah, welcome back to Deadline DC.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to switch topics now. There has been a crisis in the world of online media, online news. A whole bunch of news websites have folded. BuzzFeed, Vice, my old favorite, The Messenger. Why is that happening?
Well, this is a combination of like the perfect storm. It started under Donald Trump when he was, you know, up as calling news fake news. And so then there became all of these kind of ways to cut those people, these outlets off from their audience, basically. And it was mostly, as we saw, like on Facebook, it was focused on liberal media and centrist media, that they cut the audience off from those outlets that weren't like, you know, CNN, because the larger outlets worked with Facebook, for example, to make a news hub, and everybody else was kicked out of it. So you cut off the audience a little bit that way. And then Google dropped their ad payout up to 75% at times, based on, they're being sued over a lot of this. So what is the result of all of that? I don't know, but that basically people who are using what I like to call the blind ad network, where you're not taking money directly from somebody, which keeps, you know, some kind of editorial independence going on. And a lot of those ads have come from Google. And so they dropped their payout. And then, you know, the audience also really, I think after Donald Trump and after January 6th, when people saw that we weren't going to rise to this moment together, people really didn't want to listen to it anymore. They don't want to hear about politics for the most part. And so then that cuts the audience down even more. And so all of these things coming together, and then you have billionaires like Elon Musk buying, you know, Twitter, and he's cutting off anyone that isn't a far right conspiracy theorist. So all of these, this is like billionaires cutting the audience off from people who might prioritize democracy. So all of that together, people can't pay. If you're, you know, it's interesting to see how much money some people have had to run an outlet and they still can't make it work. It's expensive to vet your news, and to get news, to get it originally, is expensive. Pay for lawyers when you're dealing with someone like Donald Trump and, you know, people like that. So overall, like, we're just going to keep seeing more outlets fold. I don't know how sustainable this model is anymore, unless you're the New York Times.
So unless you're the New York Times, online news is in danger.
Yes. And it's
now, one of the things that I don't understand is the economy's pointing up. A lot of these, you know, large media conglomerates are making tons of money. Why is there a disconnect between the amount of profits the large media conglomerates are making and the death of decline of online news?
Well, part of that might be explained by net neutrality being overturned by Trump, so that it is mostly the big organizations who have all of the space online. And the bigger the organization, and we've seen that media, you know, consolidation owned by just six or seven people when you look at it, those folks have all of the, they have the money, they have the resources, they have all the eyeballs, the attention, they're able to get it all that way. So I think, you know, it is a wonder, like, why is the economy doing so well, but it's not trickling into online news. That's one reason why. And I know that Biden has overturned that finally. They've reversed it, but it's going to take a while to before it goes into effect. And even then, it'll take a while before it, you know, is it going to save anybody? I don't know. It's going to happen so late in the game.
Okay. So. Well, let me ask you this. Did, when Trump was president, did the fact that he was president drive, you know, hits on online news?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It was so chaotic. Everything under him was chaos, and people became addicted to the news. So people, because, you know, you tune in at any moment, like, we never could take an hour off. And every time, I think I went out to celebrate my birthday, and that night, because it was like the only night I was going to get to take off in several years, I had been waiting. And that night, the Russia thing came up. You know, it was just like, it's always some big thing was coming up. He's going to be impeached. He's, you know, sold out the country. He's done this. He's done that. It was just nonstop drama. And that's why some of the media folks want him back, because he does, you know, all this drama drives attention. But I'm not sure that people are up for another round of that. And I hope that, you know, the only positive, I run an online news outlet, so I'm not, you know, I'm not happy about the state of things. And I would be really sad. I am really sad to see so many good outlets closing and people losing their jobs is awful. The only positive thing is maybe people can get a little balance in their life, but that's what you get when you have a good president. You know, he's doing the job. We don't have to be glued to our phones. That's good. But we should still be engaged.
Now, you're the editor-in-chief of an online news site, Politicus USA. What are you trying to do? And we only have about a minute left. So what are you trying to do so your site prospers?
Well, we're not trying to prosper. We're trying to survive. And we, you know, we've just cut everything out that you can possibly cut out, including our own salaries. Because I care about democracy. I've never got into this to make money. To me, it's just about having, you know, helping people understand what's going on so they can vote in a way that will further their best interests and the best interests of their families. So we've done all the cutting, and then we do all the racing around trying to cover stuff and let people know what's going on so that they want to participate in some way.
Okay. Sarah, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Appreciate it as always. I'm sure we'll have you back to continue to discuss these and other issues. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and economist Dr. Rob Shapiro right after this break. Welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. In this segment, we're going to talk about the economy with noted economist Dr. Robert Shapiro. Before we bring on Rob, though, we're going to play this clip about jobs and the record improvement in the number of jobs under President Biden. And this is Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen.
We're seeing very strong job growth. A year or so ago, who would have expected that we could be averaging over 250,000 new jobs a month and yet seeing inflation come down? But that's what we see in this morning's report, 275,000 jobs in February, signaling a strong labor market, the longest stretch of unemployment under 4% that we've seen in 50 years, and really no evidence in this month's wage data of an acceleration in wage increases that could create inflationary pressures. Americans are getting ahead. They're getting solid wage increases that exceed inflation. but there's really no evidence of inflationary pressure coming from the labor market, and we just have excellent, strong performance. The U.S. economy is performing better than any advanced nation around the world, and our strength is buoying global growth as well.
That is Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen talking about the record job gains under President Biden. Our guest in this half hour is noted economist Dr. Rob Shapiro. He's here to talk about the Biden economic boom. Dr. Shapiro, welcome back to Deadline DC with Brad Bannon.
It's a pleasure to be here, Brad.
Well, let me ask you, we're going to talk in this half hour about an article you wrote on the Trump economy compared to the Biden economy. But there are a couple of recent new things I'd like to get you to comment on. The first is, now my memory serves me, we had, 275,000 new jobs in February. And I think in January, we had 350,000.
Correct.
That's incredible. And how many jobs have been created since Joe Biden's been president?
About 15.5 million jobs. This is by far the best jobs record. As Janet Yellen said, old friend and teacher of mine, in 50 years. This is an extraordinary performance in employment. It's, in the beginning, in 2021, a lot of the employment gains were a bounce back from the collapse in employment in 2020 under Trump. But that's not true for 2022 and 2023 and going into 2024. It's been sustained. And the fact is that not only has everyone who lost their jobs gotten new jobs, in addition, we've had millions and millions of young people entering the labor market, and they're all finding jobs. This is, you have to go back to the 60s, really, to see a employment record of this type. It's really extraordinary. But, that's not all. It's, particularly when you compare it to Trump, who was the first president since Herbert Hoover to have fewer jobs when he left office than when he entered office. Even if you set aside what happened in 2020, the employment record of Biden is about twice as strong as the employment record of Trump.
Okay. I want to get back to that, but before I want to ask you about some breaking news, President Biden submitted a budget to Congress today. It seemed to me a very significant budget proposal. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I haven't reviewed it in depth, but there is significant new spending for childcare. There's significant increases in spending for things like nutritional assistance, for things like funding the Ukrainians' brave effort to hold off Vladimir Putin. But the other significant thing about it is that it's a budget that substantially would reduce the deficit and the national and keep the national debt from exploding. Now, once again, under Trump, no president has increased the national debt as much as Donald Trump did. And it wasn't just, or even mainly, what happened in 2020. It was his incredible tax cuts, primarily for big corporations and for high income individuals that he passed in 2017. And what the president is proposing is we can reduce the deficit and fund really needed programs by not extending the tax cuts that went to high income people and rich corporations. In fact, he wants to restore the rate that companies pay on foreign income to the same thing that companies pay on domestic income. Preserve the relatively modest tax cuts that Trump passed that benefited non-wealthy individuals. Biden wants to preserve them and not extend. He's not rolling anything back. He's just not extending them. These tax cuts under the law expire in 2025. So he'll only extend the tax cuts for middle class and moderate income people and not extend them for wealthy people and very profitable corporations and use those revenues to reduce the deficit, pay for expanded childcare, nutrition assistance, the assistance for Taiwan, for Ukraine, for Israel, humanitarian aid for the Palestinians. All of that's paid for by not extending Trump's giveaways.
Okay. Now, it seems to me that any proposal that is going to reduce the tax rate, that increase the tax rate for wealthy Americans and corporate America is dead on arrival in the House of Representatives. But I still think it's a good proposal for a couple of reasons. One is it reduces the deficit. Two, it increases spending for childcare, among other things. And three, I think it highlights an issue which is very important and the president should focus on in this reelection campaign, which is the fact that one of the reasons we have such a massive deficit is because we don't have fair taxes.
Right. Well, you know, it won't pass the House today, but if we win the House this November, it will pass the House. And if it passes the House, we can use reconciliation in the Senate, so long as we hold the Senate, to pass it in the Senate. So this is a very realistic proposal if we are holding the House and Senate after the 24 election.
You think it's a good campaign document for the president's reelection and also electing a Democratic House and Senate?
Well, I certainly do. But, you know, look, the president is telling the American people what he'll do in his second term. The only thing we hear from Trump about what he'll do in his second term is set up detention camps for millions of people before deporting them and tell Vladimir Putin that he can do whatever the hell he wants in Europe.
Okay, Dr. Shapiro, I'm going to have to interrupt you because we're going to a brief break. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC with Brad Bannon and our guest, noted economist, Dr. Robert Shapiro.
My inherited economy is on the brink. Now our economy is literally the envy of the world. 15 million new jobs in just 3 years, a record. Unemployment at 50-year lows. A record 16 million Americans are starting small businesses, and each one is a literal act of hope. With historic job growth and small business growth for Black and Hispanics and Asian Americans, 800,000 new manufacturing jobs in America and counting. Where is it written we can't be the manufacturing capital of the world? We are, we will. More people have health insurance today. More people have health insurance today than ever before. The racial wealth gap is as small as it's been in 20 years. Wages keep going up, inflation keeps coming down. Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%, the lowest in the world, and tending lower. The landing is and will be soft. And now, instead of importing foreign products and exporting American jobs, we're exporting American products and creating American jobs. Right here in America, where they belong. And it takes time, but the American people are beginning to feel it. Consumer studies show consumer confidence is soaring.
Welcome back to see you, Brad Bannon. Our guest this half hour is Dr. Robert Shapiro, noted economist and friend of Deadline DC. Dr. Shapiro, what's your reaction to the president's statements in the State of the Union about the economy?
Well, they're totally accurate. And in fact, he didn't mention all of the ways in which the economy is stronger. First of all, it is clear that our economy is growing faster with less inflation than England, than France, than Germany, than Italy, than Japan, than any other major country in the world. but in addition, what he didn't mention was last year, real incomes, people's real incomes, that is, their incomes after inflation, grew 4.2%. That's the fastest rate in the 21st century, and that is faster than the average annual rate for any president since 1960. So this is really an extraordinary recovery from a period of unexpected inflation, inflation that had virtually nothing to do with the administration policies. The fact is that the Federal Reserve has said that 60% of the inflation was caused by supply chain disruptions arising out of the pandemic. And the fact that during the pandemic, a lot of manufacturers either closed down or sharply reduced their production. And then as people began to recover, it took them a while to get their production back to the levels that that the American people were demanding. So it had virtually nothing to do with the rescue package. It had to do with supply chain disruptions and with the price of oil, which was boosted by Putin's invasion of Ukraine and Europe's decision to and our decision to embargo oil exports from Russia, and OPEC's decision to try to make up for their losses in 2020 by keeping prices artificially high. You know, and the reason petroleum prices, gas prices, finally came down is because the United States is now by far the largest energy producer in the world.
Okay. Now, go ahead.
You know, we, the last time I looked at it, which was about a month ago, we were producing 13.3 million barrels a day compared to about 9.2 million barrels a day by Saudi Arabia.
Let me ask you that. First of all, you wrote an article about this for Washington Monthly. Can you, if our listeners and viewers want to see it, where can they find it?
If you go to WashingtonMonthly.com, and I don't know if it's still up on the first page, but is all you have to do is put my name in, and it'll pop up.
Okay, great. I encourage you to do that. It's a very interesting article. Go ahead.
Let me just mention one other fact. The fact is that wages and salaries after inflation over the first 3 years of the Biden administration are substantially higher than they were during the first 3 years of the Trump administration. And that's all adjusted for inflation, all in 2023 dollars. The average annual wage and salary income under Biden in those 3 years has been about $76,000. That's $3,250 more than the average under Trump from 2017 to 2019. You know, Ronald Reagan made asked Jimmy Carter the famous question, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Well, if you ask that question today, the answer is unequivocally yes.
Well, let me ask you about that, because, well, let me, do you think between now and November, Joe Biden will get some credit for the improvements in the economy? Because up to this point, he hasn't. The most recent national poll I've seen that asked people, Americans, about his economic job ratings said 37%, this is an ABC News poll, 37% approved of his performance on the economy and 60% disapproved. Mm-hmm. And so my question is, he's not getting credit for all this, and you're exactly right. I mean, the numbers are black and white, but he's not getting credit. Will he get credit by November? Because he needs the credit by November.
He certainly does if he wants to win. But those numbers have been improving. But it's very common. We see that when the economy changes for the better, it takes a year to a year and a half for the public to trust the improvement, that it's not something transient. And so on incomes, the fact is incomes have been going up very strongly for just under a year and a half. I think if they continue to rise, and I expect them to, by summer, he'll be getting a lot more credit. Part of this is also the media's fault, or in particular, social media. The Republicans have learned how to use social media more effectively to spread disinformation than the Democrats have learned how to use social media to disseminate correct information. So that a significant part of the country, for example, doesn't know that unemployment is low, doesn't know that he's created over 15 million jobs. Now, that's more of a black and white number than incomes or inflation, because incomes vary depending on, you know, where you are in the income distribution. The gains vary. But job creation doesn't vary. And so part of this is be more effective in getting the truth about the economy out. And I think the State of the Union was the first step in that. 32 million people saw it. The other thing to keep in mind with these polls, these approval rates, is that the polarization is so intense that Republicans will always answer negatively about the state of the economy if a Democrat is in office. And Democrats will generally do the same if a Republican's in office. And so these numbers now also express in part the partisan polarization. You know, we're all playing for the people in the middle who are not strongly affiliated with either party.
Okay. Dr. Shapiro, thanks very much for joining us today on Deadline DC with Brad Bannon. I'm sure we're going to want to have you back later in a year to discuss continued improvements in the economy, I hope, that will lead to Joe Biden's reelection. I want to thank both our guests today, noted economist Dr. Rob Shapiro, who talked about the economy and the economic job gains under Joe Biden. I also want to thank our first guest, Sarah Jones, editor-in-chief of Politicus USA, who we talked about the president's State of the Union address, the president's forceful State of the Union address. And I also want to thank our Crackerjack executive producer, Mark Grimaldi, who keeps the show going. Meanwhile, stand tall and stay strong in these troubled and turbulent times. We'll be back with more of Deadline DC next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Till then, have a good week.